Good morning and welcome to the Eastman Financial Report. I'm Dan Eastman, your host, and today is Tuesday, September 5th, 2023. Welcome back from the long holiday weekend, big Labor Day celebration in the U.S., and it's always good to have a weekend off and relax, and then it's always good to be back in the saddle, I guess. So thanks for tuning in to WVW-TV. Delighted to have you here. We really appreciate you watching our programming. As you know, we've been doing this for quite some time now, I think 2006 or so, and it's our goal to bring alternative viewpoints and thought to the great ocean of media information. And we really appreciate you taking the time out of your day to tune in and listen to what we have to say and give it some thought. So anyway, as you know, WVW-TV is not a commercial network. It's a sponsored network, which means people like you, viewers like you, and sponsors will contribute to the ongoing efforts of our programming, and we really appreciate you doing that because it keeps us on the air and it keeps us bringing you viewpoints that you're probably not going to hear from mainstream media, but it's important to have all voices heard in every debate. So anyway, I'd like to thank you for tuning in, and I'd like to thank our sponsor. My sponsor of this program is Swiss America Trading, which is, as I like to say, a fine purveyor of precious metals. It's an American company based out of Arizona, and it is a very well-respected company that makes a market in precious metals. So if you're interested at all in learning more about the precious metals sector and how you get in and how you get out and how it all works, I encourage you to give Swiss America a call at 1-800-519-6271, or you can go to their website, and swissamerica.com. And if you use the promo code Eastman, they will send you some free information about how the precious metal market is structured and how it all works. If you call the 800 number, 800-519-6271, they'll send you information, free information as well. So if you're sort of thinking about maybe diversifying your individual portfolio, give them a call or go online and get some free information. No pressure, no salesman will call, but you'll certainly get some great information about how precious metals work. As you can see on the screen, primarily, if you're an individual and you want to invest in precious metals, the tangible metals, you can buy gold contracts and silver contracts and derivatives and funds and this and that. But if you're interested in holding the gold in your hand, there's an old saying, if you aren't holding it, you don't own it. Well, if you want to have some tangible gold in your hands or silver or platinum, a great way to do that are these bullion coins that you're seeing on the screen right here. Bullion coins are minted by governments around the world, U.S., Canada, Austria, Australia, South Africa, China, Austria, the United Kingdom. And the interesting thing about that is if you have a bullion coin minted by a government, the idea is they take, let's say, a 1 ounce gold coin. There'll be 1 ounce of gold in that coin to a certain degree of purity. And of course, it'll a very high degree of purity because you want to own 1 ounce of pure gold. That's the goal. And you can do that by buying these bullion coins. Each one is minted a little differently. They start out with exactly 1 ounce of pure gold, and sometimes they add a little base metal to it or alloy to make the coin a little sturdier, a little tougher, and a little less resistant to wear. But at the end of the day, if you want to own 1 ounce of gold or silver or platinum or 1/2 ounce or 1/10 of an ounce, you can buy these bullion coins and rest assured that there's some government around the world that is standing behind the quality of that coin. It's a very comforting way to own tangible metal. And you can put them in your sock drawer or in your pocket or wherever you'd like to store this, and you'll have it, you'll own it, and it'll be yours. And that's a real value for investing in bullion coins. If you want to be a little bit more exotic, you can go to bullion blocks of metal, and I think we have some pictures on the screen at some point. These are bullion investments. So if you don't want 10 gold coins in your pocket, you just want 10 ounces of gold, well, you can buy yourself a gold bar or a silver bar. And it's another way to own gold that is relatively secure way to do that. You have the physical possession of the gold. And of course, these gold bars are made by refineries around the world. They take gold and they refine it into pureness, and then they'll pour it into a bar. And of course, when you buy bullion like this, you want to be dealing with a trusted supplier who's buying from a reputable source. Because if you buy a 10-ounce block of gold, you want to make sure there's 10 ounces of pure gold in that block, and that's what Swiss America does. This is another way for individuals who want to own little larger sizes to buy gold, or actually even smaller sizes too. I guess they're now making wafer gold that you can break off a piece and could use in an alternative economy to make a purchase. So if you'd like more information on how this all works, give them a call, 1-800-519-6271. They'll send you the free information. You can study up on it. And if you feel that this is right for you, then perhaps you could do business with Swiss America, one of our fine sponsors. There's also a third way to own gold and silver. And that, of course, is the numismatic world, which is a fancy Greek word that means basically coin collecting. And coins minted by the U.S. government prior to 1933 have a little bit of a you can see them up on the screen here. They have a little bit of a tax advantage in that the way they're treated for tax purposes because they're collector items and collector coins. Now, if you buy a gold coin, you're not going to get 1 ounce. It's not designed as a bullion coin. It was designed as a gold coin to be used in commerce back in the 1800s when everything was much more rugged, and there's less gold per coin, and that gold percentage in that coin was based on the exchange rate with the federal dollar back in the day. So there's a lot of history behind this, and if you want to own gold and silver coins as a coin collector, which make a great way to develop your personal portfolio, that comes with not only the gold value, which goes up and down with the market, but there's also this intrinsic value of where it was minted, the mint mark, which mint it was stamped at, and basically other attributes like the condition of the coin and how good a shape it's in. The nicer condition, the more value there is. And of course, if maybe somebody famous like George Washington owned that coin, well, then it's got a celebrity premium as well. So if you're interested in those three ways, which is bullion coins or blocks bullion or numismatic coins, give Swiss America a call and ask them for their free information, or go on their website. Use the promo code Eastman for Eastman Financial Report. And you type that in and then they'll send you this for free, and you can decide for yourself whether investing in tangible metals is right for you. They also have a very interesting report they've just come out with, which is called The Secret War. And it's about the secret war on cash. And there's a lot of talk, actually an increasing amount of talk in the financial press about the fears and concerns about centralized digital money, a central bank issuing digital money. We'd all get a wallet, a digital wallet, and there'd be money in it. Of course, we'd probably have to do something to earn the money that goes into the wallet. And the idea is that it would be, terrorist proof and, criminal proof. And the idea is that this would be perfectly safe money, but it'll be digital and all be controlled by the federal central bank, which means that you won't need to have big branch banks or, savings and loans or credit unions. All the banks will go away. You'll have one giant bank, the Federal Reserve. And this is something to worry about, but we're not there yet. This would take an act of Congress and a presidential signature to create. But the big fear that everybody's concerned about is the increasing ability to turn people's money off if you don't spend it the way they, I don't know who they is, but some bureaucrat or somebody with an opinion said, well, you're buying things that are antisocial, so we're going to turn your money off. So I always use the example, if I go to the gas station, I want to buy a can of soda, I'm overweight, so they'd say, okay, you're overweight, we're going to turn off your money, you got to buy the diet or a bottle of water, but you can't buy the good stuff, see? And that's a big fear. The same thing with a car. If you want to buy a great big gas guzzler, turn your money off, you need to be in the little electric spud there. That's a big problem because since the beginning of humankind creation, we have had the ability to make economic decisions for ourselves. And of course, the word economy, economos, back in the day, we're talking Plato and Socrates, and this is going back, 3,500 years, or 2,500 years anyway. And the idea was that a household, an individual and a household would manage their economics, economos, and how you did that. And of course, if you started over, you'd have this equal society, and then everybody start out with $1,000, and then they'd all do a bunch of business, and within a year or two, there'd be rich people and there'd be poor people, because some people are better at managing and they have a better understanding of how to multiply money, and other people, they don't pay, have this deep an understanding. So what you'd end up with is an economy that is it wouldn't be diverse. You'd have rich people and poor people. So since the very beginning, we've always had the ability to make decisions for ourselves and how we spend our money. But when the government comes in and starts to make those decisions for you based upon how they think you should live, that becomes a very serious risk to individual freedom. And there's never been a society that has been structured as such. And I think if you look back at the old Soviet Union, it lasted 70 years from 1918 until the collapse during the Reagan era, when the wall came down and the Soviet Union restructured itself as the Russian Federation and other such things. The point is, even back in those days, they couldn't tell you what to spend your money on. They only could make sure there was nothing in the store to spend it on. But at the end of the day, people have, an inalienable right to decide what they're going to do with their money. And this central banking currency idea becomes very, very spooky very quickly. Because if you're in the wrong political party, your money doesn't work. Or if you vote for the wrong candidate, your money doesn't work. If you view the wrong websites, your money doesn't work. You'll only have money if you do it the way they want you to do it. And I don't know who they is quite yet, but that's the problem. Nobody knows who they is. And there are theys out there, trust me. So anyway, that's an interesting report. If you want a copy, just contact Swiss America. They'll send it out for free. I would recommend you read it. We're getting too far down into the cycle now to not know about centralized digital currency. And if you were my students, this would be on the final exam, okay, or at least the quiz next Friday. So you want to know what this is all about. Okay, I want to jump into the news, and we've got about 15 minutes yet. But it's amazing. We are no sooner past the Great Labor Day weekend holiday, and we're all back in the office or wherever for, reentry day. Tuesday is reentry day, and what's the news? Well, you look at the news, and it's timing. And keep in mind, media always has an agenda. I mean, nobody gets on the air and just makes stuff up and have a general discussion. That's not the way the world works. And I guess you say, well, all right, well, what's your agenda? Well, my agenda, basically, I'll tell you up front, is the idea that we should be promoting critical thinking amongst the masses, amongst the people, that you have to become a lot more critical in your thinking. I don't want to say suspicious or paranoid, but I think the ability to look at news headlines and understand what you're seeing. Why is it news today? Why wasn't it news last week? Why isn't it news next week? Why is it news today? And there's always these momentum-y kinds of things behind it. Of course, one of the great examples that I'm talking about today is the headline today is there's a new battle over the spending bill. And let's think about that. We when I started this show back in March, we were dealing with this idea that we were hitting the national debt ceiling. And it was an interesting way to kick off a new financial news or financial report series, having to deal with watching the federal government ram up against its self-imposed debt ceiling and not be able to sell additional debt, which is federal notes and bills and bonds, because there's a self-imposed cap. So what to do? If we don't sell and refinance our debt, the government grinds to a halt, the federal government defaults on its debt, and the whole world falls apart. Well, of course, we watched that show for quite a number of weeks, and we watched the Republicans first coming out and saying, no, we're going to raise the debt ceiling by $1.5 trillion. Now, keep in mind, the debt at that time was just under $32 trillion. That was the ceiling. Okay, I don't know how they calculate. Well, I do. I mean, you can find out how they calculate the debt ceiling. It's quite a complex formula. But there comes a point when the federal treasury can't sell more debt because there's too much debt outstanding and you're bumping into the ceiling. So the idea was the Republicans who control the House of Representatives said, well, we've got them over the barrel now. We'll raise the debt ceiling cap by $1.5 trillion, which is a lot of money. And then the Democrats are going to have to agree on spending caps. Well, of course, that went over like a lead balloon. And, you know, Chuck Schumer in the Senate was not interested in that. And, of course, the Democrats controlled the Senate. And, of course, the Democrat-controlled White House. Dead on arrival. We're not going there. So there was a whole bunch of worries. And everybody thought the economy, you know, the federal government was going to default. And Secretary Janet Yellen, you know, came out and said, hey, guys, we're getting pretty close to the edge here. Well, lo and behold, the workaround, of course, this is old news, was that they suspended the debt ceiling. They didn't lift the debt ceiling. So there is no new debt ceiling. They just suspended it. And it's suspended until January of 2025. And of course, that is the month that the new president of the United States will be sworn in. And boy, whoever that lucky person is, they're going to be staring down the, they're going to be staring into a pipe full of like 30, pick a number. Let's speculate. We'll say it's 32 trillion. Only I looked at the debt clock today. It's not 32 trillion. It's 32.9 trillion. So like soon it's going to be 33 trillion. So I'm going to have to change my pitch. But by the time January 2025 rolls around, which is you know, a bit of time from now, you're going to see a debt, national debt, probably in the 34, 35 trillion dollars. Excuse me. And that is because that it's suspended. There's no cap, and we don't want to have another battle just before our next election. So this is getting to be a rather long story, but the news headline today, and this is where the critical thinking part comes in, is that there's a new battle over spending. And of course, there's October 1st, 2023, of course, is when the government would shut down, of course. So we listened to this story in March. Now we've got another government shutdown coming. You know, this is, you know, 6 months later, we're now talking about a government shutdown. And you have to ask the question, why is this such an issue? Because, well, the reason is that the farm bill expires, the current farm bill expires at the end of September. Ha. And the Federal Aviation Administration authorizations expire about the same time. Of course, that's the air traffic controllers and pilots and, you know, people necessary to have a transportation industry that allows us to leave the planet Earth and skim through the air for a bit and land somewhere else. So all of these big bills are coming up for renewal. And if you remember, the debt service is suspended. It is not, we didn't increase it to 1.5, okay? So everybody knows that in Washington. So the farm bill is kind of a misnomer. It's a very important bill for American agriculture because American agriculture is a huge, huge industry. I mean, it's just, it is most of the American continent, or at least the American, the footprint of the United States of America is mostly ag and mostly rural. And the intricacies of the farm bill would take probably two semesters to lecture on and try and figure out how this is. But rest assured that anyone who participates in agriculture is very, very interested and concerned about what's in the farm bill because it's an annual or biannual appropriation. And, you know, there are crop insurance things in there and crop subsidies in there. And then there's incentives in there and there's lending parameters in there. And there's, you know, there's all sorts of things that are very valuable to the agricultural interests. And of course, America, up until very recently, was majority ag. Now we're getting to the point where our cities and suburbs, there are more people in the cities and suburbs than there are on the countryside. And the psychological shift, when you live in the city or the suburbs, you're really not thinking about people who live out on the land and they work the land. So there's this increasing concern in Washington, especially amongst ag interests, that the ag bill is very important. Interestingly, and this is most phenomenal to me, you know, but I've known this for quite a time, is that the ag bill, the biggest chunk of money is not for farmers planting corn seeds or beans or whatever they're planting out there. It's the food stamp program, the SNAP program. And they put that into the ag bill. And this goes back a long time. This isn't something new. But the idea was, if you want to have a robust food stamp business program in the United States, and you had to get that passed Congress, where most people were really not interested in providing food for people who, don't have food, that was not a popular plan. If you don't work, you don't eat theory. This was not a popular thing. So somewhere along the line back in the day, they connected food stamps to egg. It makes sense. Food, egg, it's all the same. But the reality is food stamps is a huge, huge urban-driven program. And it's very important for people who live in urban areas who need food stamps, the elderly, low-income people who, basically use the food stamp program to buy food, to assist and subsidize them in the ability to purchase food and survive. So it's a big deal. That's the point I'm trying to make, is that why is this news the day after Labor Day? That's when this bill comes up, and it's very critical to negotiate a robust food stamp program. Because if you remember, and this is going to be a problem, student loans kick in today. The interest starts to accrue on student loans again, and people will have to start making their convenient monthly payments. And we know inflation's been roaring along at either 3% or 9% or some percent. And if you are in one of the three silos, you're in the low-income silo, the middle-class silo, or the rich silo, the low-income silo, which is sadly growing, this becomes a real problem as the inflation and the cost of food, cost of gasoline. Big story today is the Saudis and the Russians are extending their production cuts, which bumped oil prices to 2023 highs. You've got West Texas Intermediate at $87 a barrel, and you got Brent crude out of the North Sea at 90, so 87 and 90. We're getting to be thinking about 100, and the Saudi prince said, we've got to see $100 a barrel for our oil because the cost to develop our kingdom is going through the roof with inflation, so we need more money for our product. So you get this cost-driven inflation. Well, if that's affecting the Royal House of Saudi, and they are pushing gasoline or barrels of oil to $100 per barrel, think about, silo number one in America. Gas prices are really, really a big deal. If you need a car to drive to work, whatever. So you're going to see more people looking for assistance, for food assistance, because their limited dollars are being pulled by higher gas prices, higher utility prices, higher rents, of course, and higher taxes. In our city of Milwaukee, they were all gung-ho, we got to have another 0.2% sales tax on the city of Milwaukee to fund their pension. The government, I'm not kidding, folks. I'm not making this up. Their government worker pension was struggling, so they got a 0.2% increase in their sales tax. So the poorest of the poor in Wisconsin can make sure that the government workers' pensions are intact as they retire and move to Florida where they don't pay any state income tax. And this is a great system. But the point is, if you're living in Milwaukee and you're looking at very high gas prices, I'm looking at today, I noticed $3.89 a gallon in our market. And of course, rents are up, taxes are up, food prices are up. So at the end of the day, that bill becomes very important. And there's going to be a lot of push in Congress to increase the SNAP program to get people more food. It's not a good place to be. I mean, you'd prefer to not have a food stamp program because everybody who lived in the country was affluent and well off. But that is not the case. So why do we see the headline today? Because this is the battle. And of course, you can't have that program elapsing. And all of a sudden, at the very time people's student loans and everything else is kicking in, there's a decline in food stamps. You're going to have hungry stomachs make for angry people. We don't want to see that. We just don't, especially in places like ours. Wisconsin's a very agricultural state. It's food all over the place. All you need is money to buy it. So anyway, so that's an interesting development, and we're going to watch that. There's not even a draft in circulation in Congress as of this morning of the new farm bill. So they're a little bit behind, and I think that's going to be a big part of the thing that we'll be watching over the next couple of weeks as this goes forward. Okay, so I also noticed while I was researching that the deficit, the current spending deficit for this fiscal year is $1.8 trillion. And that's what's pushing the $32 trillion up. So by the end of this fiscal year, We will be seeing $33.5 trillion in debt because the deficit spending is just so large right now. And our tax revenues, because the economy is slowing, when people aren't making money, they're not paying as much in taxes. You end up with lower tax revenues, much higher spending, bigger deficits. And at the end of the day, even the interest rates, as the Fed continues to jack up the interest rates, the interest that the federal government, the Treasury, has to pay on outstanding debt, the refinance debt, it's higher, and it's kind of a problem with that. So, okay, I want to move on to the next. U.S. factory orders are down in July, 2.1% month over month. There was a bump of 2.3% in June, so now we've basically canceled that out. You can argue that factory orders are flat, and that's not helpful because factory jobs tend to be urban jobs, and they tend to be jobs that have pay some, you know, decent pay and benefits. And of course, as companies aren't producing as much, they cut costs, and unfortunately the very first and easiest cut is labor. So that's not a good sign. We'd like to see factory orders going up, and I think that's something we have to really think about. So when I looked at the federal debt to GDP numbers, I just wanted to get a sense of where we are. We're talking 32 trillion, 33, 35 trillion, you know, pick a trillion, what's a trillion dollars? But I noticed that if you look at the federal debt to the GDP, with the gross domestic product, that's the national income in the Keynesian model, national income, that's all the money that people and companies make, okay? When we looked at federal debt as a percentage of that whole national income, back in 1960, it was 53%. The debt was 53% of the total national income. That's the federal government. So basically, it takes, you know, half a year, you know, of national income to pay it off. And that's coming out, basically still coming out of World War II, kind of at the end. In 1980, it had dropped to 35% because things basically, you know, the government was living within its means. It's hard to believe. In the year 2000, it jumped back to 56% of the GDP. So this is 2000. So now it's 2023. 23 years later, federal debt to GDP right now is 122% in the history, modern history of America. 56% was troubling. It's 122%. So we have more federal debt than we have full economy, the private sector. And that becomes a big part of the problem. Those types of numbers are unsustainable. And we're going to see this play out. It's not going to be good. And that's why you want to think about getting your ducks in a row and think about how do you protect yourself from what can only lead to massive inflation. Anyway, I'm out of time for today. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'll be here. I'm here all week. Happy to talk with you again tomorrow. So have a great day and talk to you tomorrow. Bye.